And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 20 of The Roundtable. I am Grant Brisby. I'm here with Mark Carrig. There's no Andy McCullough. He's always described himself as the glue of this podcast, so he's a big fat liar. So I'm here with Mark. And Mark, what have you always wanted to say about Andy that you want to get off your chest? Anything?
Oh, no, don't set me up like that. Don't. Well, I've always wanted to say this. Andy is on assignment.
Yeah.
That's why he can't join us today. It's not that he's taking a vacation or whatever. Our boy is on assignment.
That could be anything, though. Like the Giants announcers are fond of, Dave Fleming is on assignment or John Miller is on assignment. With Andy, he could be literally in jail. He's got a little white collar vibe to him, white collar crime.
I guess I could say that about him. Yes. He's got the white collar vibe. I mean, we could spend a bunch of this pod just talking smack about him, but let's save that for when he's back.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's better when he's back. So if you were listening to the Athletics Roundtable on the Baseball Show podcast, you have probably consumed some Fernando Tatis Jr. content already, and you probably want more because I can't get enough of this story. It is wacky to me. It's earth-shattering. Like, it feels like there's a lot of stories that come around and it's like, wow, what a big story. Like, no, this is what we've always, those were all false starts. This is the big story. So let's start talking about Tatis. I think it's bad for baseball. What do you think?
I think it's horrible for baseball. Yeah. I would have to agree with you there, Grant. Gosh, every time you put a baseball game on and they're selling ice cream, and who's over there selling ice cream? Fernando Tatis Jr.
He's almost like he's an exciting enough player to maybe like, I want to try a Dairy Queen hamburger. And then I stop, but like he almost gets me there.
Well, he gets me there. I would definitely do that. But like, yeah, I mean, it just speaks to the stature of the guy and what he means to this sport. We talk about him as a player, obviously a great player. All right. Obviously this like super athletic, fun to watch, explosive. Just he does everything you could want on a ball field, right? He's all of those things, but he is somehow more than that when you consider, he's 23. He, looks the part, acts the part of this, young star player. He's playing on this exciting team. The sport is desperate for personalities. The sport is desperate for a face that they can kind of hang, the rest of the game on. He's one of them, and then this happens. It's just really my reaction to it is like, again with this shit, really again. Like, I mean, don't these ball players freaking understand by now, like, that this is wrong, that you shouldn't be doing this, that it has wide-ranging consequences, that it could stick with you for the rest of your career? Do they not understand that?
It's crazy. When I was talking with Andrew Baggerly yesterday, he brought up a good point that I hadn't thought of. He's 23, and you could pretty much write out that he's not going to get to the Hall of Fame, which is bonkers to me when you're thinking about a 23-year-old superstar. You can kind of plot out his future in the face of just public perception. And that's wild to me. And I do think there is a difference. Look, I looked back at what was written about McGuire and what was written about Sosa in 1998. I read Howard Bryant's Juice in the Game. Like, I went and I did this in-depth research, and it was different back then. When you had the reporter pull out the Andro from McGuire's locker, the reporter was the villain. It was leave this guy alone. You had Murray Chass saying, come on, this is much ado about nothing. He's just bodybuilding. And everyone sort of knew, you know, these guys weren't big through pea powder protein or whatever. Like, that was different. I do think there is a sense, like Manny Ramirez was kind of that demarcation line where he knew, and he knew that it was bad, and he knew the kind of the vibe of the whole sport was against it now. That was a little bit different. This feels much, much, much different when you're getting caught in 2022. It just feels much different.
On a different level, a bunch of different levels, because like you just mentioned, you know, the usual suspects when it comes to the steroid era. Most of those guys already had great careers by the time they'd been popped, or and not popped rather, but like when people started to suspect that something was going on. I mean, Mark McGuire had 49 homers in a season long before there was any suspicion of him doing that stuff. And a lot of it had to do with him, you know, he was hurt for like 2 years, you know, it and that's when you start to see change in his body, right? Like you saw that with some of the other guys too. But those guys, you know, Barry Bonds had all those MVPs already. Before people started like going, hey, what's going on over there? Tatis is different. He's at right at the beginning of his career, right? Like he hasn't, when you look at what he's done, he hasn't done all that much because he hasn't been around all that long. A lot of these people, or you talk about PEDs, they had been around for a long time. So like it's kind of different in that regard. It's almost like, you know, and I think people's motivations are super complicated. So I don't want to oversimplify them. But I do think it's fair to say that when it comes to the steroid era, so much of that narrative was driven by the fact that you had guys that just didn't want to lose performance as they got older, or they're just trying to stay on the field. You could argue that that latter part applies to Tatis, given all his injuries or whatever. Again, I don't want to speculate on motivation or whatever. All I'm saying is that I think it's jarring for me that he's right at the beginning of what looks to be an amazing career. At least one where he's going to be noticed and he's someone worth paying attention to. Had all those things going for him. And then this happens. You make this decision. And then you create a cockamamie cover story for it that makes it look even worse. I think what was also striking to me, Grant, and you saw it come out of the clubhouse, you saw it come from AJ Preller. These fellas, they see a pattern and they don't like it. And they've gone public with it. Not Dennis Lynn, our writer, our Padres guy, you know, really good beat writer, did a great job of his coverage of this because you could sense that in what he was writing. They're sick of it already. And I think that also, to your point, Grant, a little bit different than what it has been in the past. I feel like guys, teammates have always been eager to try to defend them. You didn't hear that this time.
No, that was wild. It was, and it wasn't a super explicit, this guy's a clown, what is this guy? It was very between the lines. It was couched professionally, but it was there. It was very there. There's a pattern of decision-making that we have to get to the bottom of. This is becoming something that we don't want to get used to, things like that. And it is wild, and it makes me wonder if there were problems beyond the accident this spring and the hidden injury that he kind of came to camp with and how it was a little bit bigger and he should have been already on the mend and already discussing stuff with team doctors. That's where a lot of this started, but I wonder if there's stuff just underneath, a constant torrent of stuff. Again, I don't like to speculate, but the outside perception of Tatis is, I didn't really think about it until you mentioned it, but if you're talking about the three players that Major League Baseball wants to get in front of people's faces, it's Ohtani, it's Tatis, maybe Harper, maybe it's not even three, it's two. It's Tatis and it's Ohtani. It's here is electricity, here is joie de vivre, here is people that you want to watch. This is why you watch. They're flipping bats, they're doing cartwheels, they're throwing 100 miles an hour. That's gone, and that is crushing for baseball. And I wonder how that decision is made, if he just thought, I can't be healthy without this, if I can't be good without this, if I can't be the Tatis that I know I can be without this. What was the decision-making process to throw all that away?
You know what else gets me, right, to that point? Like, you're talking about decision-making process. one of the things that I find fascinating about baseball is how many second generation players there are, or third generation players that there are. Obviously, you can say genetically, right? Like, you're coming from an athletic family that you're going to be probably athletic enough to do this. And then, you know, if you're the son of a player, you've probably had the means to like train yourself and do all this stuff. But I think there's another component to that, is that you kind of learn the ins and outs of how a clubhouse works. Like, you don't have to go through the process that a lot of people that don't have that kind of lineage have to go through, which is figuring out how to navigate this world. Chances are, you've been of this world. Fernando Tatis Jr. has been of this world far longer than he's been a player. And yet, despite the fact he had a father who had a long career in the major leagues, you know, presumably it was around the clubhouses and saw how things are supposed to be done, to still be making decisions like this, it just feels, you know, unexplainable to me. Like, he's been given every break, is what I'm saying. You've been given every opportunity to make good decisions, and yet these are decisions being made right now. And that's a tough one. And when you talk about who the league wants people to see, here's another reason to me that it's crushing. The Dominican Republic churns out great ball players, and maybe no one better from there than this guy. But he also has sort of like walked that cultural line, right? Like, I think Tatis resonates with so many people, right? Not just within the clubhouse, but fans of baseball, right? Like, that maybe pockets of fans that don't think about each other very much, right? Like, people in the Dominican Republic and people, let's say, in San Diego, they might not think of each other very much. And yet here's somebody who is an important figure to both. And now the sport has to grapple with the fact that moving forward, if they want to market this player who reaches so many folks, that there's this asterisk stuck with him now moving forward, no matter what. And that's really terrible.
Yeah, I think it's just, you don't market him. He is now just poof. He's out of the consciousness, at least if you're the forward facing consciousness of baseball. You don't even take that risk. It's not as if it's such a hot button issue. I feel like steroids used to be a hotter button issue a long time ago. Now it's more just roll your eyes, this guy, and you can dismiss him rather than argue on the internet about him, so to speak. And I just think he's poof, he's a phantom. And he will do his best to get back in the good graces and try and be a good citizen for the next 15 years or however long he plays in the game. But It's toothpaste that is out of the tube and all over the mirror. Like, I just don't think it's coming back.
It's too bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's like, this is a player that you feel good watching.
Yeah. I've talked a lot when we're talking about the Juan Soto trade. I've talked about the Padres and their historical irrelevance, their historical screw-ups, the players who have passed through there only to become Hall of Famers elsewhere. They have just this long, sad history. But it's the saddest of sad histories because it's not the Cubs where everyone gets to pinch their cheeks and go, oh, a little curse, and you don't have Jimmy Fallon making movies about you. You just languish in obscurity. And now they had something, man. And if I'm AJ Preller, I'm wondering if I can get James Shields back. Like, that is, that's where they're at. And that they don't deserve that, man. They deserved to have at least 5 years before everything collapsed. You know, when Barry Bonds, all the Balco stuff started coming out, Giants fans were already, they got their money's worth from Barry Bonds. They got all that enjoyment. And then when the Balco stuff came out, it's like, eh, that's kind of funny. This is not that. This is not that. And it's the Padres fans don't deserve it. The kids in the Dominican, I don't want to say what about the children, but what about the children, you know? Like, I just, everything about it stinks and I hate it, and I hate it a lot.
It's a bummer. It's because of who it is, right? Like, the way he plays the game is so much freaking fun, right? He's talented. He looks the part. He acts the part. Like, he, you know, he's what you want a good, exciting young ball player to be until now, until really the spate of, like, what we would say, like, a year where it's been injury, bad decision, you know, the spring training thing, motorcycle, whatever, like, and now this, like, it's just one thing after the other. It does fit in with that sad, unlovable loser history of the San Diego Padres, for sure. The thing I keep waiting for is, like, we keep getting these, okay, here we go, the Padres gonna challenge the Dodgers. Like, come on. Like, I mean, I want to see that badly. I want to see that badly, all right? And again, we're going to be deprived of it, right? Because if he's not back, let's look at that offense. oh goodness, like not good enough. All right, they're just not good enough. And so again, we're going to have to wait. And then like what, how many, you know, how long is it since he's played now? Coming back next year off the suspension, all that stuff, right? Like, when are they ever, are the Padres ever going to challenge the Dodgers? Are they ever going to be whole enough where you can say, all right, here it is. All these promises that have been made to finally take on the Goliath, because it hadn't happened yet.
I remember looking at a list of Padres prospects and going, holy crap, Xavier Nady, Tag Bozied, Josh Barfield, like these guys are stacked. And you just went down the line and finally the Padres, that was 20 freaking years ago. Like Xavier Nady's an old man now. He was out in the 2012 celebration for the Giants. He's out in the field and he looks like an elder statesman. That's how long the Padres have been on the cusp. And they just, I don't know, man. It is, all right, let me switch gears a little bit because I don't want to forget this. And I want to ask you, as a baseball consumer, do you want your steroid cheats and scoundrels to come out and say, yeah, I did it. I thought I'd get away with it. I did it. Does that push your buttons at all? Or do you just expect them to lie and it's a part of the dance? Maybe he has, his mom was posting pictures of his ringworm on Instagram. So maybe, yeah, no. But do you want your guys to lie? Do you want the story?
I don't care. Yeah. I don't know if I care, Grant. Honestly, like, I'd prefer that they just, you know, stop freaking cheating. If I had a choice, it would be that. Like, just work your ass off and go play ball. Work hard. Work hard at your craft, which is demanding and incredibly difficult to do, and do the best you can. It sounds so hokey and simple, but like, why not just that? I don't know. Okay, if they go out there and admit that, okay, like what I think everyone, like this is a very like puritanical American thing. Go out there and take your medicine, all this crap. I just don't see that resonating with me. It's like, okay, whatever. All right, like, just don't do it. I mean,
it's a dance the dance kind of thing. When I'm covering Bonds in my early blog days in 2003, 2004, 2005, there was this schism, and it was everything that you do is awful. This is a bad human being. And then there is this internet subculture of, who cares? Let them do it. It's all, you know, it's the Wild West. I don't care. Let them all do steroids. It's fun when they're huge and big. And to me, what always gets overlooked in a situation like this is, why are steroids or performance-enhancing drugs bad? And to me, it's like a workplace ethics thing where you have two players, two peers, two employees, two people trying for the same goal to be successful in this profession. And you have one willing to take something that has adverse relation or adverse effects for your health. And you have one who's not willing to take that. It's unethical for you to take that advantage over someone who is choosing the wise, the logical path. And that's the difference. It's a workplace ethics thing. It is not about, oh, you know, I don't know. It's so easy to lose fact or lose sight of what is the actual morality of this. And the idea of Tatis just saying, you know what, I'm just going to do it and no one else is going to do it and wink. And that's what's really harmful to me.
People die over this. You see high school players taking this stuff and dying because of this. And they're taking their cues from major league players. So yeah, that's a great point, Grant. We can't lose sight of that. This is life and death that we're talking about. This isn't, yes, it's workplace ethics, 100%. And there's principles involved, 100%. But also, it's health related, man. Like, you can die abusing these drugs.
When I think of Barry Bonds and him doing performance-enhancing drugs, I'm not thinking so much about the 73 home runs that he hit. That's the only season he hit more than 50 home runs. That was in 2001. I'm thinking about the 147 games he played in 2004 when he's 39. I think about the health. I think about the ability to bounce back, the muscle, the ability to just get that juice back in your body. Not, well, pun I guess intended. The ability to bounce back is what Barry Bonds was doing when he's 39. That's not how the human body works. Trust me, as a 44-year-old man, no, it's just not how the body works. Eventually, there will probably get to a point, assuming that society is still around, where you can get that without the side effects. And it's not a workplace ethics issue. And we're going to have a much larger, different conversation about that. until then, like, that is maybe what Tatis was going for. He's trying to bounce back quicker. But when you're 23, I don't know, it feels greedier than that.
Yeah. And that's, again, like I said earlier, that stood out to me. It was just, I was trying to think, like, who was the last prominent player who was kind of on the younger side that got in trouble for this? Starling Marte, I think, was sort of in that range. Like, he'd just broken out and then got popped for this. But, like, you know, it is just terrible on many levels. You know, I hate having to talk about it. I hate that, like, for a long time, you're going to see this guy, and that's the first thing you're going to think about. Now, you said something earlier that I'm curious about. Do you actually think this would impact this guy's Hall of Fame candidacy if he ends up having that kind of career? Because, let's, you know, he's 23. Tack on 10 years, he's 33. He's had 10 years, let's say, where he stayed on the field and done exactly all the things you would think he could do. Do we still remember? Because, see, I am kind of one of these people who's skeptical about people's ability to retain these things anymore. I think players have gotten really good at learning how to whitewash this stuff off of their resumes. Because, like, Nelson Cruz got popped for PEDs. He's the grand statesman of the game now. Doesn't come up as often. And that was relatively recent history, right? Starling Marte, people forget. So I wonder, does this stuff stick as long as it used to? I mean, right now it does, because it just happened. But do you honestly think 10 years from now, if he's had the career that we think he can have, that people are still talking about PEDs and Tatis in the same breath?
I do. I think that there is a difference between, let's say, a high-profile player, let's say David Ortiz, who is mentioned in a report. There's nothing conclusive. It's hearsay. You have, if once you bring up, well, David Ortiz was mentioned in the Mets report, well, then you get people saying he wasn't, nothing was proven, and you can have this back and forth. There's a difference between that and being the face of PEDs, which I think Alex Rodriguez is the face. You're not going to get him in the Hall of Fame anytime soon. You might get a Veterans Committee or Hall of Fame Era Committee, whatever, down the way. It's not happening now. Same with Bonds, same with Clemens, same with Sosa, same with McGuire. There's a different scale to failing a test or being just completely embedded within that culture compared to the whispers of Mike Piazza or Jeff Bagwell. When you have this guy was mentioned in this report, nothing was proven. It's a little bit different with Tatis, both in stature and it's what you think about now. And I think it's going to be like, I get that people are goldfish because I'm a goldfish and I'm going to forget about this podcast the second I close my laptop. But at the same time, it's a tipping point. And I don't know where it is. I just know that Tatis is over the tipping point and that's his legacy now.
So you mentioned Alex Rodriguez. And yes, that's still something that comes up when you say Alex Rodriguez. He's also one of the most visible faces of the sport right now.
For sure. There is whitewashing that goes there, where it's the public perception. I think Tatis can come back and become popular enough. Maybe one day he's on a broadcast somewhere. He's doing something in his post-baseball career where you're not necessarily thinking about that. But when it's time for Hall of Fame and you're saying, okay, we are going to honor this player, not this player. I'm going to vote for this guy, not that guy. It's always going to come up there. It's always going to come up there because you have it all over baseball. I mean, Matt Williams was a manager. Matt Williams is currently a third base coach. Matt Williams is linked to performance-enhancing drugs, and nobody talks about that. So it's possible. It's possible to have it forgotten. I think wherever that line is, Tatis is over it, where it's always going to be that Alex Rodriguez thing, at least when it comes to his individual accomplishments.
I'm kind of leaning towards the side of, like, I think it gets whitewashed to a certain extent moving forward, because it's enough time in his career. He's got enough ball left in front of him to do something about it.
I'm not even sure if I'm rooting against that. I might be rooting for that. I might want to stop talking about this tomorrow and just forget all about it and go back in the eternal sunshine of the spotless mind machine and just forget that this thing ever happened and watch him play with the Elan and the joy that he has. I'd love to do that.
Did you say Elan?
I did.
Oh,
did I pronounce it right, though?
I don't. I might have butchered it, but that was hot.
I've used joie de vivre on my last two podcasts, so I have to like bury that bit because
yeah, you don't hear this on KNBR, boy. I'll tell you that. yeah, like he's got so much ball left in front of him, that I actually think it'll be relatively easy for him to get by this. I mean, assuming that he keeps his nose clean moving forward, that he produces, that the Padres win something and that he's a part of it. I think there's a lot of reasons that people might not have this be right at the forefront. The other thing is like the changing electorate. The people who actually vote for the Hall of Fame, I feel like they're, what's the word? It's not even values, they're sensibilities. The sensibilities of the voters have changed so much in the time that I've been in the BBWAA. I think the Hall of Fame voting for a long time, and I mean, it's still this way somewhat, is that it was a chance to sort of make perceived wrongs right. I didn't think that was very fair. I've never personally voted that way for that reason. Like, I don't think it's fair that if you weren't writing this stuff when they were playing, to then hold it against them now that they're not. It never squared with me. But the voters who do that are kind of graduating past voting eligibility. And like when it's Tatis's time, again, assuming that he's kept his nose clean, that he's had the career that folks think he can have, which I think he can have, the voters are going to be different too. And I don't know if they have that same feeling of responsibility to right wrongs that some of the current voters have now. I just don't think they're ever going to have that.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The voters of the future are not going to be whipped up in the same way. There was that time, man, that Balco post-Mitchell report time where it was you could devote, Murray Chass would have a blog every day about something. And it was just, everyone was arguing about it and snipping at each other. And yada. It's not like that anymore. It's just like, oh, come on, man. Like, you were so much fun. And now, so you might be right. You might be right. And look, we don't, I don't even know if we're going to have a functioning society in 20 years, much less a Hall of Fame. We might be in gladiatorial combat for potable water. Like, I don't know about that.
Oh, I mean, the megastorm might hit in the Bay Area and that's it. It's over, baby. Turn out the lights.
Super Bowl.
See that over the weekend? The megastorm story in the New York Times?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, yeah, California's in trouble, man.
Give me the megastorm story.
A megastorm story is that at some point in the next whatever years, like some gigantic megastorm is going to pack so much precipitation that it's going to like create massive economic hardship and, you know, loss of life and, you know, damages in the billions of dollars. So you got that going for you.
Wow. And then, well, I'm recording this podcast like right on top of the Hayward Fault. It might be right beneath my feet as we speak. So good times ahead.
I used
ahead.
To live by the Hayward Fault. Where do you live?
I'm in Castro Valley.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Yeah. No, I lived up in Pinole, San Pablo, Richmond, right up there. The Hayward Fault runs right through there.
Heck yeah. Yeah. No, it's right here, making me a little bit nervous talking about it. A little bit.
Yeah, but no, it turns out the earthquake's the least of your problem. It's the megastorm you got to look out for.
Well, maybe the ash from the supervolcano will knock down the megastorm, and like it'll actually just lead to 10 years of really good weather. Like, who knows? You know, nature's funny like that. Ha ha.
But the Giants will still not catch the ball. But anyway,
I do want to say before we go on that I. Preparing for this because I'm diligent. I'm a responsible journalist. I researched a lot of stuff, and by that I Googled bad haircut fungus on Google, and it comes up. And I was not expecting a whole lot, but it does comes up. At what is so on Healthline? It's a headline: What is barber's itch causes and how to treat it? And then you scroll down. What are the symptoms of barber's itch? And then you scroll down again, and it says. Pictures of barber's itch, and then it says, warning, contains sensitive content, view gallery. Would you click the view gallery link, or are you like me, where you just, I'm just going to let that hang as warning, contains sensitive content?
No, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Because so, like, this is on Wiki, because Wiki can throw you some curveballs. I don't like that.
Yeah, it's Healthline, which I think
Oh, Healthline. Mm.
I think it's half legit. I don't know anything about
it. I might click that one. If it were Wiki, there's no chance. Because Wiki holds no, it pulls no punches, you know?
Yeah, and then the third link down was Men's Health, 7 gross infections you can get from the barber. The subhead is, the barbershop has always been a safe haven for dudes, but it's also a nasty undercover germ factory. So I don't know, man. Maybe Fernando, I'm looking at these pictures and barber's itch looks pretty gnarly. Maybe you get something like that, but here's the thing. I don't think you just go and slap whatever you find to treat ringworm when you're a millionaire. I would like to think you get some advice and perhaps medical advice on how to treat it.
I'm just saying, how much ringworm is there to have so much of this stuff in your system that it's triggering a positive test? Right? Like, I mean, has this been... I just... Whatever. This... The cover stories I find very tiresome. I realize I'm also the person who said, like, it doesn't matter to me whether they say they did it or not. So maybe I should reconsider my answer because, like, I do find these cover stories just so incredibly tired. Oh, my God, are they tired.
You know, in 2019, Logan Webb, when he was a Giants minor leaguer, he was suspended for performance-enhancing drugs. And in his statement, he wrote, quote, "For the past month and a half, I have tried endlessly to find the answer why the M4 metabolite was found in my urine sample." So that's how he starts his statement. And I thought that was the funniest frickin' thing. Just, you know, I've for the last month and a half, I've tried to find why the M4 metabolite was found in my urine sample. And I goofed on it all day. I just goofed on it and goofed on it and goofed on it. Cut to a year later, a year and a half later, Ken Rosenthal has this big feature, and it's great. It's after surprising PED tests, MLB players fight to clear their names, and it goes into all these players, and there does seem to be this link between this M4 metabolite in your urine and players going, what the hell? Why would I take some weirdo steroid from 1983? This doesn't make sense. It's clearly in something. And now I've got the benefit of the doubt when it comes to Boog Powell, and it comes to, I can't remember who else, but Cody Stanley, Logan Webb. now that I've been chagrined like that, I'm almost willing to accept a ringworm analysis. Like, I'm almost willing to hear, oh, this is because of that. And I'm trained a little bit better to think, oh, maybe that's legit. Ringworm to me is not on that scale. I don't buy that for a second. I want a better excuse than this. I want a store-bought beef with ConAgra putting too many hormones in it. I want something better.
Sorry. I was just imagining going to like the freezer case and looking for the juice stop ConAgra beef. Like, excuse me, what aisle can I find the enhanced beef?
What, the filthiest you got? What's in this Jimmy Dean, man? Is this...
Yeah. I want the most juiced up pork that you have in this store, sir. Where can I find this?
Because I'm telling you, they're blaming the kids. They're all tall these days. And, you know, as a short king myself, I don't like that. And I'm blaming the beef for that. So if you've got a bunch of tall kids these days and it's the beef, maybe it's what's wrong with Fernando Tatis. But you're talking about ringworm from a dirty razor. I don't know, man. I
blame ConAgra. That's just easier to do that. It's ConAgra's fault.
That is, I actually listened to a whole podcast about ConAgra and how downtown Omaha used to be so cool with all these, the architecture in Jobbers Canyon was really cool. And then ConAgra tore it all down and split. I don't know, I could go on. But anyways, do you have more Tatis content?
I think that's it. Once we got to like the enhanced beef at the grocery store, it seemed to me like the stop sign.
Oh, man. On the MLB roundtable, we'll talk about sliders and sliders. That's what we got here.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh,
boy. You're just going to keep getting shit like that. All right.
Andy, come back. Andy.
He really was the glue. All right. The other topic that we had was managerial firings and vacancies and doings and transpirings, because you have managers getting fired in the middle of the season. And I'm fascinated by it because I generally think it's like pouring thimbleful of water on a boat that's on fire. But then you have the Phillies, who are all of a sudden the Phillies are in. If the season ended, they'd be in the postseason. Now that they don't have Joe Girardi, maybe Joe Girardi was the problem. Then you've got the Rangers. They fired Chris Woodard, even though the Rangers are doing exactly what I thought the Rangers would be doing all season. Like, I'm not surprised by the Rangers one bit. And so I don't see how it would... I don't watch a ton of Rangers games, so I don't know if there really was a clubhouse problem or not. What's the deal with firing managers in the middle of the season? Do you think it makes any difference? Do you think it's just, to use a baseball term, eyewash?
Well, it's total eyewash, right? Like, it's do something to do something. I think... whatever happens after that move is made was probably going to happen anyway. I mean, I think in most circumstances anyway. The Rangers one and Chris Woodward, a little bit weird, because were the Rangers supposed to be good? Right? Like, I mean, the Blue Jays were supposed to be better than they were. Charlie Montoya got fired. The Phillies were supposed to be better than they were, even though you could make the argument that the roster didn't really support those expectations. It still wasn't totally unreasonable to think they were going to play better, and they didn't, so Joe Girardi was fired. The Angels have two generational players. And again, you make the argument that, yeah, that roster was never set up to compete there, and I would agree with that. But Joe Maddon's a big name. He gets fired. Like, you can almost understand those. This one is just bizarre about when it comes and why, because honestly... even though the Rangers did invest a bunch of money, they made moves, all this stuff, got some players in there. Did anybody look at that roster and think that this was the year? You know, it felt like, you know, maybe one more, then you can start to have that expectation. So, yeah, that feels weird. Maybe some folks got impatient. Maybe it was time for the eyewash. I'm going to do something to do something move. I don't know. Maybe there's stuff going on in the clubhouse. It's hard to tell, but... weird. I don't think it's going to make a material difference. But yeah, I was just, I guess, taken aback by it, only for the fact that, like, I was like asking, like, were the Rangers supposed to be good?
Yeah, I mean, they did have the high-profile signings, but it's not Chris Woodward saying, hey Marcus, maybe if you could swing at balls out of the zone more, like, if you could stop hitting, you know, like, he's not the one pushing that button. I can see, and maybe it's my own outsider bias where I'm looking and I know Joe Girardi because he's high profile and I know Joe Maddon because they're high profile. I can see expectations combined with disappointment added with a manager with a defined strong personality. And when you're losing and you're not expecting to, and then you've got a manager who's a bit of a weirdo, that's what pushes you over the tipping point. Now, they're very different managers, but Girardi, very taciturn, very just, you know, he's very just, you know, he's Joe Girardi, whereas Joe Maddon's a little bit wackier and a little bit goofier. I could see both of those rankling in the wrong situation where I didn't get that vibe from Chris Woodward, but maybe I needed to be around it more. I don't know.
Taciturn. Boy, you are. It's like Andy's here. Yeah. It's like Andy's still here in spirit. Taciturn. I like that. Why? Like, why? Like, what? Just write it out, like, you know, and I just didn't think they were paying attention until next year, frankly. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, let's be real about, like, competitive windows and, like, what situations teams face. Like, I can understand being frustrated that maybe, you know, there wasn't improvement in certain areas that you might have wanted to see. I totally get that. But, man, no one had expectations for them this year. I don't mean, like, that's why, like, I legitimately asked myself, like, wait a minute, did I miss something? Because, like, I just wrote them off as, like, yeah, that's a next year thing. Like what the Jays were 2 years ago, all right? Like, that kind of thing where it's like, yeah, they're close. Okay, you can see another offseason where if they make some good moves, their players start to graduate. Okay, you start to see something coming together. That you make the moves, you know, that you made in the winter if you're the Texas Rangers because the opportunity was there and you had the means and you're setting yourself up for something bigger down the road. But that wasn't this year. So it's just bizarre.
You start wondering, like, I was looking like, okay, did he lie about his time in the Vietnam War? Did he steal Derek Jeter's glove? You know what I mean? Like,
what a pull. That actually happened, didn't it? Well, the Blue Jays manager? Who was that?
Blue Jays.
I don't remember the name. Like, it, but oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's wild.
So I'm wondering, like, it's like I'm looking for something like that. And it's rude and it's inappropriate to speculate that that's what's going on, but that's just to show the level of surprise that I had. Like, is there more to the story? But you were talking before we got on here, you had an interesting idea where you were thinking, if you are a manager, Mark Carrig is a, our producer Brian says, maybe Woodward had ringworm. You don't fire people for ringworm. That is ableist, producer Brian. So if you are a manager, Mark Carrig is a manager, and you have one of these four openings after the season, because they all have interim managers, right? Maybe you're going to stick with a Brian Snitker type who proves himself as the interim manager, but let's just pretend that all four teams have an opening this winter. Which one do you, managerial candidate Mark Carrig, want to take?
I'd start with Toronto first.
Yeah, I think that's the R-S-T-L-N-E, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I like that pull. But you're full of these references. A Wheel of Fortune reference at the 40-minute mark. Attaboy. So yeah, like, I think the Blue Jays are the clear number one. They're the free letters, as you say. Then it gets a little bit dicey after that, right? Because you got Texas, Philly, and the Angels. And, you know, Philadelphia obviously has turned it around. But given the expectations, given where they play, given that division, where you have like the Mets who aren't going anywhere in that division, you know, then the expectations that come with, like, you've got Bryce Harper on the club, right? Like, you got all these investments on the club. Like, you have to win. Man, so that sounds like an easy number two, I guess, just because you've got some players in place and, like, they're proving that even with a roster that's very flawed, that where the weaknesses are obvious, that they are in playoff position. They got a decent chance to make it there. So I guess that's the number two option just because of that, but that's not exactly a picnic either. Then the Rangers and Angels. Like, the Angels, I think, are just, I'm just going to put them four, I guess, by default, because I think ownership is where problems begin and end in any professional sport. And I think Artie Moreno in his tenure has proven that he's part of the problem, right? Like, he's the one picking these folks. He's the one making calls. He's the one signing the checks. It's added up to a whole lot of nothing, despite all the shiny toys. And I read somewhere, oh, he's into the shiny toys. Well, he's gotten plenty of those. But the shiny toy he wants is a ring, and he's been nowhere close to that. And I think that's an indictment on him, right? Like, and I think if you're an owner of a club that's out front like that, like, he spent money, you give him credit for it, but like, clearly there's something missing there. And you wonder if it's in the owner's box. And so I'm going to make that 4, just because, like, I've seen too much of that to think that that's something salvageable. I just think it's so difficult to have success at anything if the folks at the top have proven over and over and over again that they're not capable of making decisions that are going to lead to success.
That's a good, clear argument. I think I would go Philly 4, because here's why. They seem mean out there in Philadelphia. And I'm a feller who doesn't like conflict. I like to just kind of sit back and make my knock-knock jokes on Twitter. If I'm not winning in Philadelphia, I feel like they're going to come after me. And I don't know, man. That seems like just such a high pressure. You were given the tools. You were given an ownership that's going to spend. You're going to get that in Anaheim as well. It's just on a different scale. But I don't think the Angels' job is very attractive, because what you have there is the problems that they're having. I don't think that their problem is that they gave Anthony Rendon too much money, which they did. That didn't work out. I don't think that's the problem. Their problem is the entire organization is struggling to find quality pitching. They just cannot find, and it's not just the pitching, but it's the players around the margins. Or if you look at the Rays, and the Rays are bringing a Deke McDeeker, and he's all of a sudden their opener throwing, oh, his spin rate's 5 million. Like, the Angels are not finding this guy, and if they're not building him, they're not. And then you've got the Giants, and they're just going out, and they're going Alex Wood, and they're refurbishing him, and Alex Cobb, who was on the Angels, they're refurbishing him. The Angels aren't finding those, and that starts between ownership and in the dugout. That's Jerry, you know, that's the GM. I almost said Jerry DePoto. That is a long time ago. That's just how old my baseball brain is. So I think that that's an issue. But then you get to the Rangers, and like, John Daniels, I guess, is not going anywhere. Like, if you're looking at the Rangers roster, I'm not seeing Chris Woodward's problem. I'm looking at like Dane Dunning getting 22 starts and Glenn Otto. And, you know, it's, what were you expecting? And like you said, it's not going to be this year. It's probably next year. But you have Josh Smith at third base, Brad Miller in left a lot of the time. I don't know what they were thinking.
It's an incomplete team.
Yeah. Cole Calhoun's 34. I didn't even realize that. And he's out there for 350 plate appearances. So you're going to go into a situation where you have to wonder about the bones, and the GM's going to be the same, apparently. He's never going to go away. So I would put that 3. I think I like the 8. Man, no. You're right. Phillies 2. Phillies. I don't know. I'll take.
Wait, but what happened to that? They were big meanies.
I'll take it. I'll take it, because hey, I'm looking at just what do you do with the Angels? What do you do with the Rangers? Where's the Phillies? You know what you do with them. So I'll go Phillies 2. I'll go Angels 3. I'll go Rangers 4, because at least the Angels can spend. Well,
Deke McDeekers.
Man, I usually come.
That's
up
a with, perfect. No, actually, that's a perfect Rays pitcher name.
I don't know. I feel like I had a fastball down the middle to come up with a good fake name. I felt that was a little, that's not as good of a fake name as I can come up with.
Why is it? Because when you say Deke McDeekers, I'm seeing this like kind of lefty. He's got like the long hair, yeah, kind of skinny. Yeah, kind of throws from here. Yeah, that shit's moving. Like, that's it, you know?
One day he's got a mustache, the next day does it, and then he does again. Like,
Right. He's throwing these sliders from his hip pocket kind of thing. Yeah. Like, that's Deke McDeekers. He's doing it for 2 innings, opening the game, calling it a night. That's perfect.
Well, I mean, if you're Artie Moreno and you're looking at the Rays just like finding these guys through Craigslist ads, how are you not going out of your head and just saying, get me those guys, you out, get me someone who knows where to find these guys? Because it's not just the Rays doing it. It's a lot of, it's the Dodgers doing it, man. The Dodgers are finding these guys. They've got Tyler Anderson, who's throwing the best baseball of his career. Find me some brainiacs who can do that, and then I'll spend on Anthony Rendon. Maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't. I don't know.
Well, I know this has been a knock with the Angels organization for a long time, but you're naming clubs that have put a lot of money, time, resources into infrastructure. Let's throw the Cleveland Guardians on there. They keep churning out art. Like, they're building these, and it's not an accident. They've invested heavily in these labs, right? Where you're looking at technology and R&D, and you're hiring great coaches to help implement this stuff. You're hiring people to oversee this stuff, that these are intentional, concerted efforts, and they're getting their money's worth, right? And that's, I think, part of the greatness of the LA Dodgers, is that you're an idiot if you think it's just them spending money. Well, they do, but it's also that they are going for world-class infrastructure, and they got it, right? And the New York Mets are trying to work towards that because that's been a weakness there for a long time. The Angels forever didn't do that. They spent on the major league roster. People took that as, oh, yeah, at least they're spending the money. And it's true. Let's not underestimate that. But games changed. The standard's higher. You have got to invest there. I know Artie Moreno, like that leadership group that's currently in place, has talked about this being a point of emphasis. But obviously, it's a bit late. This stuff needed to be happening earlier in Artie's tenure. All right? Like that. And to me, that's where it all begins and ends there. If Artie Moreno thought it was important to do, it would have happened already. You know, and that's, I'm not picking on him because they've had struggles. That's every owner. All right? Like, every owner is the one making those level decisions. At least they should be. And if they're not, and they're just, like, punting that to people that you're entrusting to lead, then you better pick the right leaders, and that hasn't happened there either.
I think about the Rockies, who have not just the difficult problem of assembling a baseball team, but the sport's biggest conundrum in building a baseball team at altitude, and how they have an extra layer of difficulty, just this added layer, and they are slashing analyst positions, and they are not investing in that infrastructure. It's like the worst thing you could do is, the best thing you could do is take Chris Bryant's money and build some sort of supercomputer that Brainiacs can sit and plug into and figure out the sport of baseball. They're doing the exact opposite. So I think of that.
Well, they put themselves on an island. That's the craziest part, right? Like, I think you can make a lot of, like, I think baseball teams and how they were run were a lot more individual back in the day. There was a lot more of a wide range of how teams did business. For better or for worse, that has narrowed, right? Like, I think teams, by and large, are kind of doing the same thing. They have different parts of, you know, how it's baked in is a little bit different, right? Like, because people are different and philosophies are a little bit different. But the general scope of how they're doing it is roughly the same. But then you've got, like, God, I'd say 7-8 clubs that just have remained outside of the bubble. And the Rockies are one of them. And it is so painfully obvious. And I think if you're a Rockies fan, that's got to be the most frustrating part, is that if you sign up to root for a baseball team, you know losing is a part of the bargain. What you don't sign up for is that it never stops. And when you look at the Colorado Rockies, it's like, when are they going to make the playoffs? When is that ever going to happen? Honestly, right? Because even the Baltimore Orioles, as bad as they were leading up to this season, which is, you know, they've given their fans like some joy, and that's really cool, right? Seeing that ballpark filled and people trying to believe in it, I think that's great. But where is that going to happen for Colorado in this division with these people running it, with this ownership group? It's never going to happen. And that is an awful thing to say to fans. Awful.
It's wild. And because Andy's not here, I'm going to use a poker analogy just to annoy him. It's like if you had the same 30 poker players playing at the same table, and now you've got professional poker where everyone knows the odds, they can calculate the odds in their head when you've got on the, you've got 7-3 suited in your hand, and you've got the, here's what the flop is, and you've got the percentages in your head. And it's like having six players who aren't doing that and just going like, all in, 7-2 suited. And I don't know. All right. We are way over time, just because Andy's not here, and we enjoy talking without Andy. So thank God we finally got all this off our chest. I had a good time. We will be back next Wednesday is when you listen to this. So we will be back next Wednesday with Andy, a full complement of people. This is episode 20 of the Roundtable, and I still have to work on my sign-offs. See you then.